that, but they are master's level universities. And these would be the University of New Haven, University of Fairfield, and University of Hartford. And they are very good friends of ours, and we enjoy it work. But not at a graduate professional doctoral level, because they don't have PhD programs. This longer introduction is to basically make you understand that with your admission into the University of Richmond, and in particular into the School of Engineering at the University of Richmond, you are in the company of a very, very select few set of universities that are home to a School of Engineering that is a doctoral School of Engineering. As a matter of fact, the only other discipline that is more rare to exist at the doctoral level in university is medicine. There are only 80 MD, meaning schools of medicine, universities that exist in the US. And these two professions, or these two terminal degree type of programs, are really the rarest to find, a PhD in engineering and MD in medicine in the universities in the US. Talking and delving a little bit more about, in particular, the School of Engineering. School of Engineering is actually the second largest graduate program School of Engineering in the state of Connecticut, in New England. We actually are the largest graduate program of engineering in the whole state of Connecticut. We have more graduate students than the state university, which is usually a big university in every state. In New England basically is a region that includes Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, and Connecticut, the top northeast six states in the US. Within that region, there are approximately 60 or so out of these 120 universities that offer a PhD in engineering. We are actually the second largest engineering graduate program in New England. The only program that is larger than us at the graduate level in the New England region is the MIT. And it's not a bad thing to be next to the MIT within that category, obviously. Other statistics I will discuss as I progress, but let me move on. Again, this is the campus. You will see this picture a million different times in brochures and on the internet. It is actually a beautiful campus, truly beautiful in every single way. And as Steve mentioned, we are one of very, very few. I mean, you can count them on one hand, really, universities that have a seaside campus. So it's really a blessing. As you can see, 98% of our students receive scholarships or financial aid at the undergraduate level, and I will tell you a little bit more in details about the graduate assistantships, research assistantships, teaching assistantships, and work-study positions that will be available to you when you come and join us, which is actually very important for you, both professionally and from a financial point of view. Okay, so you have seen this. This is our enrollment. And as Steve mentioned, we approximately are 5,600 students, actually. This is 1 year old, closer to 5,700. And more than half of our population are graduate students. The number is actually 3,400. And these graduate students exist in the School of Engineering, School of Education, which is purely a graduate program, School of Business, School of Design, Arts and Sciences, and also the College of Public and International Affairs, in addition to our very extensive and very well-known Health Sciences Division, which you will be actually interested to know that engineering does a lot to work with them as I progress further. Again, these are the schools that exist. I just want to highlight one thing, which is probably important to your way of thinking, and important also as a defining character of what the University of Richmond and engineering in particular is about. Of course, I am a roboticist. That's my area of research. I did my PhD in robotics from, actually, University of Pennsylvania, and I finished there in 1991. I was one of very few roboticists, actually, with a PhD in robotics in the world at that time, because it was a very small field, obviously, at that time. And of course, when you work in areas like robotics, like autonomous engineering, like mechatronics, like bioengineering, and many other areas, these are areas that are not really very one discipline oriented, right? And this is the way engineering education actually is progressing. The whole concept of having mechanical engineers work by themselves in workshops and electrical engineers working by themselves in electrical engineering and electronics labs, and computer science students doing programming, etc. That whole concept has more or less disappeared and or on its way to disappearing. There are many, many emerging areas in the world right now in which the whole concept of having multidisciplinary engineering graduates trained across the discipline is crucial for the development of these multidisciplinary fields. A good example is my own field. So, and of course, I am terribly biased because that's my background. The area of robotics is an area in which a multitude of students do work. University of Bridgeport is home to one of the top School of Engineering, or the university is home to one of the top 10 robotics labs in the world, and that's the Robotics Intelligence Sensing and Control Lab. And I really do encourage you to spend some time on our website, not only to glance at what the labs are and the different projects, but to take a deeper delve into the website and read some of the research papers, read some of where our alumni work, read some of what the work that we do. My robotics lab at the University of Bridgeport is home to undergraduate and graduate students from computer science, computer engineering, and of course these students work on the mechatronics aspects, the programming aspects of the robot, deep learning, artificial intelligence implementation, sensory perception, computer vision, etc. Also the lab has graduate students in mechanical engineering who are working on the structure of the manipulators and the mobile platforms, statics and dynamics, inverse dynamics and such. It is home to many electrical engineers at both the undergraduate and the graduate level, and I mean the master's, bachelor's and the PhD. And these students are working on the actuators, they are working on developing innovative sensors, they are working on signal processing applications for sensory feedback for these mobile platforms and regular manipulators and such. The lab is home to several bioengineers. I know that there are bioengineering students, one or two that are here coming for bioengineering. And these students work on areas like biomechanics, devising prosthesis, doing work for the disabled within the robotic lab. Also, it is home to several students within the mathematics department, working on things like kinematics and inverse kinematics and such. Interestingly, we have also increasingly have been working with other schools at the university, most notably the health sciences division. We work with our School of Nursing, and we work with several other departments like the chiropractic school on devising incredibly innovative projects. In the case of nursing, one of my own PhD students and one master's student are actually working on a humanoid simulation man. Basically, that simulates a patient, and we're trying to do several experiments on how to hone the skills of the healthcare professionals trying to take care of that humanoid as part of their training. We are also working with the chiropractic school on devising force feedback gloves that the chiropractors who manipulate the spine can wear, and while they're manipulating the spine, the glove is going to take feedback readings to make sure that the pressure points are applied appropriately as a way for training the chiropractic student and the manipulator. So, lots of work we do is with the School of Design. School of Design is a very eminent school. It has majors in industrial design, interior design, and graphic design. And lots of the work that we do with them is in the area of automotive engineering. The university has recently acquired a submarine, which is actually quite a feat. Very few universities own submarines. And what we plan to do is that submarine is actually retrofitted so it becomes completely autonomous and are able to control it from a platform over the sea and make it completely self-navigation. It's an army project. One of the other projects that we're doing with the School of Design and have done recently is in the area of aerospace. We have received a very significant number of grants. I'll talk about this in details later. From NASA, approximately 18 grants. Many students from all the departments at the graduate and undergraduate level have participated. Recently, we sent a robotic monkey to space on a hot balloon. You can see these videos everywhere on the website. It was a NASA-funded project, significant project, and we worked with the School of Design and with the Physics Department on the project, School of Arts and Sciences. We have projects with the School of Education. We actually built a high school, a technical high school in the city of Bridgeport, and at least 30 or 40 graduate students actually are working with high school students within that high school to actually hone their skills on things like lab robotics and other applications. The point that I'm trying to make is one of the things that distinguish the University of Bridgeport as one of these 120 doctoral schools of engineering in the country is that interdisciplinarity and training our engineers at the undergraduate and the graduate level in so many disparate disciplines, not only within the core of what they study, is one characteristic that we have been doing and we are very good at doing for the last many years, unlike many other schools. And this is extremely helpful from the employment point of view, because many of the companies are truly interested in hiring people who can work in teams. And within any company or any significant organization, not every single person in that team would come from that background. We have a person who's interested in the MBA program, and again, you know, one of the targets for that particular program in your case would be probably the insurance companies upon graduation. Most of these insurance companies need MBA graduates who are very skilled analytically. They have good ideas about big data and how to do statistical analysis and business intelligence and engineering economics and finance. So even entities like engineering companies, I mean, insurance companies or UBS or financial companies are looking for a wide variety of disciplines. One of the reasons we established our bioengineering program, which is led by an eminent researcher who was actually an individual that should be shown earlier, Professor Praveen Batra, was the advice of some of our pharmaceutical companies in the state of Connecticut. And what they told us is that we have been hiring a lot of your engineers for our production facilities. We've been hiring lots of people from your chemistry and biology department. But our problem is these people cannot talk to each other. They spend a couple of years before they understand each other, you know, within any specific project. And they specifically requested that we consider the launching of a significant program in biomedical engineering so they can get graduates from that program who have that interdisciplinary knowledge in developing drugs, in biology, in biomechanics, in bioinformatics, and in core chemistry and physics. So that was one of the reasons for launching actually the biomedical engineering. Again, the point is you are going to be going not only to one of these 120 doctoral awarding schools of engineering, but you are going to a university that is very, very well known for encouraging interdisciplinarity and allowing students at the graduate level to work in interdisciplinary projects across the departments and across the universities. In areas that are becoming more and more in the future, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later, interdisciplinary, like robotics and automation, mechatronics, wireless and mobile computing, financial engineering, social media marketing, etc., etc. Continuing on, again, these are the undergraduate degree programs in UB. We have currently three undergraduate programs. We are actually big at the graduate level, but the undergraduate level, we have only maybe 500 or 400 or so. The undergraduate programs in engineering are the ones highlighted here. We have three of them, computer engineering, computer science, and electrical engineering at the bachelor's level, and we are starting a mechanical engineering in fall 17. And at the graduate level, we have 6 degree programs at the MS level and 2 or 3 at the PhD level. The 6th program at the MS levels are again the one highlighted in purple, biomedical engineering, computer science, electrical engineering, and mechanical engineering. These are the 6 MS degree programs, and technology management also. And at the PhD level, we offer a PhD in computer science, computer engineering, and in technology management. So these are the degree programs we offer. This is kind of an interesting statistic for you at least to understand and know the kind of research setup that you're going into. We are a very research and scholarly oriented school of engineering. These are some statistics from ResearchGate, and actually I encourage all of you to go to that portal. ResearchGate is a scholarly portal, very similar to Google Scholar, and you can search the ResearchGate portal not only by the name of the scholar or the faculty member or the researchers, but you can also search that particular portal by a school, like School of Engineering at University of Bridgeport, or School of Engineering at Yale, or the School of Engineering at the University of Connecticut, and so on. And it gives you an idea about the number of publications that the various faculty have produced and the number of citations that they have received. The website is researchgate.com. And as you can tell, engineering is amazingly eminent within the publications. We're close to 1,800 publications in the last few years, and more than, I'm looking at the citations, more than 4,306 citations in the last couple of years. That's actually an amazing feat. And followed very closely, we have also School of Business, Arts and Sciences, and all other schools combined. And we are going more and more into the research direction. For your own research, regarding the other stuff that I mentioned about the different ranking and the classification of universities in the US, there are two websites that I'd like to, in addition to the University of Bridgeport website, to go to do a little bit more research. One of them is called the Carnegie website, or the Carnegie classification. Carnegie is spelled C-A-R-N-E-G-I-E. And this Carnegie classification website will basically give you these statistics that I mentioned at the beginning of my presentation. How many schools in the US, how many of them offer degrees, the master's level, associate's levels, PhD level, and so on. And the other site, which will get you a little bit more details about the 200 or so schools of engineering, is the American Society for Engineering Education. That would be ASEE.org. And that will give you a listing of all of school of engineering at the different levels, and also the level of these schools, whether they are bachelor's, master, or doctoral. This is our student to faculty ratio. You are getting into a situation, again, among the 100 or so doctoral schools of engineering, in which you are not going into a program where you will be lost. We are big enough to be able to offer a huge and wide variety of research areas, fields, disciplines. We have 22 research interdisciplinary labs in the School of Engineering, but at the same time, we keep our classes small. University of Connecticut, again, one of the other doctoral universities in the state of Connecticut, the other two, Big State University. You would be lucky in a state university in the US if you attend a class in which there are less than 200 students. That's the way state universities, government universities work. It is a law of large numbers for the in-state students to be able to pay less tuition. University of Bridgeport, I can guarantee you that you will never be in a class, never. Not one class, whether it's a lab class or a theory class, and we don't have many of these, in which you will be in a class with more than 25 or at the most 30 students. And most of the classes will be around 15 to 20. This is an amazing added issue of importance. As should be mentioned, or as actually one of the students mentioned, the testimonials, this is the situation that your professor and yourself, when you start taking classes in any given semester, will know each other personally. They will know you. They will know your name. They will be expecting to see you in the office. Of course, that has an advantage and a disadvantage, right? The advantage is you can talk with these professors whenever you want, and it's really a tutoring type situation. The disadvantage is you can't get away. You cannot disappear in the back of that classroom and try to, not really get engaged. That's actually not possible. And you will really like it, because it's really very individualized, personalized attention. And that's a very rare thing, and that's another aspect on what you're writing, right? Why engineering at UB has its unique characteristics that are good for a particular set of students. Some students don't like that. Some students want to be anonymous in a 300 student classes in every single class. If that's the kind of student you would like to be, this is not the place for you to be, obviously. We have a great center for career development. You can take a look at this a little bit more in details, but I'm going to give you a couple of statistics or a couple of numbers. As Shelby mentioned, we have about 800 or so graduate students in the MS program and a couple of hundred at the PhD students. These 800 students, on the average, from a financial / scholarship point of view, you can typically classify into three different categories. The first one is new incoming students. We get about 200-300 students every year, more or less. And these students, most of them have what we call an entry scholarship, a large percentage, which ranges from $3,000 to $6,000, I think. And the second class are students who are, after their first semester, And usually 50% of these students get, an assistantship in one sort or the other, either a graduate assistantship from the school to help with teaching and or other duties, a research assistantship with, from one of the professors from external research funding, which I'll talk about later, to work on research with that professor, or a work study position, hourly paid, to work in our one of our labs to help maintain our equipment and software and so on. And roughly a third of these students are on what we call CPT, Curricular Practical Training. After 9 months in the US, you are able to work in one of our partner companies, and most of our students, international and domestic, peruse that option, and they go and work in places like United Technologies, Pitney Bowes, UBS, and many, many other companies and startups. We also have a high-tech business incubator on campus, which is now home to 4 startup companies, and has graduated already 13 companies in the last 3 or 4 years. And all of these companies are exclusively staffed by engineering and or business students from the University of Bridgeport, which is a great advantage because you get your training literally across the street from the School of Engineering in a company that resides at the University of Bridgeport. And that's, again, a very unique advantage that is there in the University of Bridgeport, in the School of Engineering, that is not prevalent in many of the other 90 schools or so in the country. Continuing on, these are some facts about UB School of Engineering. Again, we are the fastest school of engineering in the nation. Our School of Engineering used to be a couple of hundred students. Now we're close to 1,500. We are the largest graduate program in the state of Connecticut and the second largest now in New England. We used to be one of 3, I think. Number 2 used to be the State University, University of Massachusetts at Amherst. Now we are actually number 2. We are placed in the number 2 spot. We are the only PhD program in computer science and engineering in New England. And let me explain what that means. Computer science is, in some ways, a different discipline than computer engineering. I think there is one computer engineering MS student. Is that you?
Yes. 2.
Okay. I got it. So basically, computer engineering is a mix of programming and or hardware design and interfacing equipment to microprocessors and mechatronics. I mean, that's the whole purpose. So you become a quasi-expert in hardware architectures and systems, plus you would have rudimentary and appropriate knowledge in coding. So it encompasses both fields. Computer science is more about your development of your software engineering skills and coding skills. The PhD program that we do have at the University of Bridgeport actually emphasizes both. It is a computer science and a computer engineering highest credential. It's the only one in New England. We also have the PhD program in technology management. The PhD program in technology management, which is something that many of our master's graduating engineers aspire to go to, is one of 5 PhD in technology management programs in the US, and the only one in the Northeast, actually. So that's a very distinguishing characteristic. You see some rankings here. I basically don't care much for the overall university rankings because engineering is a completely different beast. You might have a ranking of a university between the top 10 in the world that actually doesn't have engineering schools or engineering PhD programs. So engineering is a very different proposition, but we have appeared in many different rankings. We have several dual degree programs across the disciplines, and many of our graduate students at the master's level elect to actually go for a second degree because education in the US is very flexible, and many of our, for example, computer science, computer engineering, mechanical engineering students elect to go for a degree in technology management at the edge of finishing their master's degree in engineering. We have more than 75 full and part-time students. I think the number is about 32 full-time faculty members, 10-year track, and the rest, about 38 or 40, are either lecturer instructors or adjunct faculty members in the School of Engineering. The last two items are actually wrong. There are more than actually 20 books that have been produced by our faculty. I'm not talking about research papers, we have already discussed that. More than 20 books have been produced by faculty members, that many of them are being used as research monographs or textbooks in the last few years. And more than 600 student and faculty publications and conferences. We are a very entrepreneurial university. We also are a university that supports our graduate students. Once you come and join us, you will be sent by the university as you do your work in the classes and the projects to conferences. If you write articles, are accepted at these conferences, held both within the region and in some cases as far away as Europe. And we do support the students who actually produce scholarly work, and we have never ever refused a request for them to go and travel to pay for their expenses and support them to present their work. And that's actually a unique thing in UB. In many other doctoral schools of engineering, that level of support is basically reserved for the PhD students, not the master's degree students. UB, we do offer that level of support and opportunities to our master's degree students. So that's something that I encourage you to do. Excuse me, when you come to UB. Also, the whole concept of having graduate assistantships, teaching assistantships, work study position, and such, in many of the other schools of engineering that are also good, the 100 or so doctoral schools of engineering, these assistantships, research, and teaching are again typically reserved for the PhD students, not for the master's students. In the case of UB, and that's why UB is a good option for many international students, we actually get more than 200 of our students are allowed up to BGAs and RAs, and we use their services because we consider it as part of the practical training that would be worthwhile. Continuing on, last year was actually kind of fantastic because we had a huge graduating class from with PhD degrees in from the School of Engineering. I think we had 15 total. Let me just give you a few examples. I think you're probably more interested in students who are Indian students, but in general, these two gentlemen, Isaac Makawan is a bioengineer, Indian obviously, and Isaac got his PhD after finishing his MS in bioengineering, got his PhD in computer science engineering, which is kind of interesting, again talking about interdisciplinarity. His work is on cancer research with Professor Butler and nanotechnologies. And actually, we hired him as a postdoctoral fellow now in the School of Engineering. He got a couple of offers for professor positions, but he elected to stay one or two more years to finish the work that he's doing in the lab. Bush, in fact, this gentleman, is an electrical engineering master's degree student who completed his PhD also after finishing the master's degree in computer engineering. He is now a research fellow in the School of Engineering and will be a visiting assistant professor next semester. These are two amazing success stories. I was trying to see. Ashish also, the gentleman in the middle, he also graduated with a degree in computer science PhD, and his master's degree was in biomedical engineering. He's now a visiting assistant professor at the University of Connecticut. So you have a wide variety of really wonderful examples of students who have done extremely well, really extremely well. Continuing on, again, UB is a research tank and a think tank for new ventures. I never tire from saying this, but you know that's what I truly believe in. As Steve mentioned, the world is going to be a completely different world 5 or 10 years from now. Who would have thought that we would have self-navigating cars 5 or 6 years ago? There are now, city of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania, in the US, there is a fleet of Uber cars that are actually self-driving, that you can call them and they come and pick you up and they go to delivery whatever you want. Google have had self-driving cars in California for actually 3 years now. So in many different ways, the world is a changing world. The kind of things that we are used to doing, as a matter of fact, are not going to be happening 10 or 15 years from now, in your lifetime. The whole concept of mobility is going to change. Unmanned air vehicles have been there for a long while. As a matter of fact, the University of Bridgeport worked on an incredibly major project for the Army for unmanned air vehicles, where we developed unmanned air vehicles the size of a soda can with unfolded wings for Army surveillance applications. We also have working on under the sea self-navigating submarine, as I mentioned earlier, and we are doing lots of work on mobile platforms that are autonomous. Again, 5 or 10 years from now, the whole concept of needing to own a car would not be there. All the cars would be a service, and you would call the car and it will come to you. Without a driver, you will hop in it, it will deliver you somewhere, and it will pick you up when you're done. This is not science fiction. This is going to happen, and it's going to happen every place in the world. People are talking about the fact that, am I going to be trusting myself to go in a car that doesn't have a driver, and it is going based on sensory tag and the computer vision? It sounds like a very risky and scary proposition, right? Well, the good news is, once this becomes part of the way things are happening, you know, the self-driving cars, all of the cars are going to be like this, and they will be communicating together, right? So the potential for human error that typically is the thing that causes accident is going to disappear, because these cars will avoid each other because they are talking in a network to each other. So actually, it's going to be safer than actually people driving cars. So not only is it going to be safer, it's going to be cheaper. The whole concept of ownership is going to change. The whole concept of manual labor, right? The idea of people doing things with their hand is going to go away. There will be no need for construction workers. There will be no need for people who are serve food, for example, or serve people doing other things. All of these will be autonomous platforms. And the more that people are shifting towards that new economy, which will happen, there is no escaping it, actually. The more that people will be needed to train on 21st century technologies so they can be productive within that new economy. Anyway, I know this might sound a little bit radical, but this is truly the direction the world is headed. It's a direction in which artificial intelligence and deep learning platforms are going to be the norm. It's a direction in which the need for manual labor will simply cease to exist. And there will be basically limitless advantages of being able to mimic the brain for computing and automation purposes. We, again, are a very research-oriented school. Our work is in many, many areas across the disciplines. In the case of electrical engineering, we do lots of work, as you have seen Professor Gupta talk, in audio signal processing, lots of work on programmable logic controllers, lots of work on robotics and automation platforms, lots of work on image processing and computer vision and signal processing for biomedical applications and biomedical signal processing within the EE department, in addition to a very good program on sustainable and renewable energy. As you can see, these gentlemen and lady are working on a solar cell, basically. We have solar cells, we have wind turbines on the top of the school of engineering, and we do lots of advanced work. We actually are partnering with a company, interestingly, in India, that is producing a new battery based on nanotechnologies that is much, much more efficient than existing batteries. And we are partnering with them, actually, in the next couple of months. And we're seeking funding to expand their factory. So in addition to the factory that they have here in India, they are going to have a factory in the city of Rishpur. So this would be for the electrical engineers. For the biomedical engineers, as you've heard Professor Patra talking, lots of wonderful work being done within the area of nanotechnology for treating diseases like cancers and many others, and for creating new materials and new skin, you know, for burn patients, and many other disciplines and many other work in nano carbon tubes for various applications. And you can peruse these sites, and I actually encourage you, really encourage you, especially the people who did not go for the visa interview, to really delve deep into these sites and to really understand the research going on. And not only that, but to communicate with the professors who actually are doing the research and are in the lab. And I think you'll talk about this later, because really this will open your mind to opportunities for working on these disciplines after you move to the University of Rishpur. Within the area of computer science engineering, so many different research labs within the area of robotics, intelligent sensing and control, within the area of facial recognition, within the area of wireless and mobile computing, within the areas of autonomous engineering software for self-driving platforms, both under the sea and on the ground, and software engineering applications in general. So these are the major research areas within computer science and again within computer engineering. Continuing on, examples of some of the work we do on the top right side, Professor Jeremy Lee from the Mechanical Engineering Department designed a 3D printed habitat for NASA for in a competition for Mars habitats, so we eventually have habitats on Mars. And actually our team was flown by NASA to present their work, and it was one of the top 10 in the country. This is, of course, as you can see, some of the work within 3D processing. Professor Potter over there, the nanotechnology lab, top left. Again, this is in NASA when they sent the balloon. And many other applications within the area of CAD design, nano-electromechanical systems, micro-electromechanical systems. One of the significant amount of research work being done by one of our electrical engineering professors, Professor Michael Shank, or Shank Yu Shank, is in the area of devising nano-electromechanical systems for delivery inside the body. Also in the area of computer science, Professor Zhang Qili is doing very significant work jointly between biomedical engineering and computer science within the areas of basically determination of tumors within the intestines via small cameras that people actually bring. And while these cameras are traveling inside the body, they take pictures. The reason for doing this is that growth or cancers or tumors, to be specific, within the inside of the small or large intestines are nearly impossible to detect by x-rays, CAT scans, or MRIs. It is one of the most difficult cancers to detect. The symptoms are obviously a diagnosis tool, but the ultimate diagnosis tool is to actually go inside and take pictures. And basically, the work in the multimedia lab, MIG lab, by Professor Jean Curie, is in the area of trying to analyze video streams of this camera traveling inside the intestines after it goes out, of course, to basically check for areas in which there could be the need for medical intervention. That particular lab is also kind of interesting because they do lots of work on, interestingly, sports engineering. So one of the things that that lab does is analyzing martial arts competitions. You probably all have seen the Olympics, things like taekwondo, for example, and judo and so on, are judged by humans, right? The contact points when you're playing. And basically the work of Professor Zhang Qili is in the direction of automating that process, so the cameras would be the judges, so that it's more accurate, and he has been funded to do this, interestingly. Lots of work in computer vision from that lab. Again, within computer science and computer engineering, these are the research areas. You see biomedical engineering as a subset of the research in computer science engineering, because we do. As an example, the work that I've mentioned of Professor Zhang Qili in medical image analysis inside the body and many others. We do lots of work on computer arithmetic, digital signal processing. We do work on formal verification and building motherboards, FPGA and VLSI design for microelectronics, multimedia databases, and obviously wireless and mobile computing and electronics. I will make this presentation available to you actually shortly after, because I think it's actually comprehensive. I didn't think it was that comprehensive since I started doing it. In the area of biomedical engineering, these are the research areas that we have. We recently actually hired an incredible researcher who just graduated from Dartmouth in bioengineering, and that's one of the best programs in that area. Again, we do work on biomaterials, tissue engineering, bio-micro-electromechanical systems for drug recovery, and also for personalized medicines. Personalized medicines is one of these amazing grand challenges. But the idea with personalized medicine is that you don't just take drugs, you take drugs that are tailored for your own genetic code that are more effective. And that would be every drug, not only for very specific cancer-treating or AIDS-treating or autoimmune systems drugs, but also for things like the common cold. Because the effect of certain drugs based on your own genetic code is much more effective than taking something off the shelf or something that is prescribed. It's a new field of medicine, and lots of work is being done in that particular area. Lots of work in sequencing, bioengineering, tissue engineering. Even the area of biometrics for security applications is part of the work we do here, retinal detection and fingerprint detection and so on, in addition to work being done in these areas of computer science engineering. In the area of electrical engineering, these are the major research areas. Again, Jack Dobrowski is working, one of the teachers working on PLC control, microsensors, microactuators. That would be 10 to the minus 6, right, meters, and 10 to the minus 9 meters, actuators and sensors. For mainly drug and biomedical engineering applications is done by Professor Shang within this area. Large-scale distributed systems, electronic safety, that would be Professor Mercer. We actually have the top the top consultant actually in the country in bios in electrical safety, and one of the most sought after legal consultants in electrical accidents, Professor Larry Mercer, last year, is actually one of our faculty members. And that's a wonderful thing, actually. Continuing on, this is technology management. I know there are no technology. Are there any technology management skills here? Okay, that's the only major dismissal. However, I actually do have no doubt that many of you down the line, after you join engineering and get close to finishing your MS degree, you will be very interested in doing this. I wouldn't be surprised if the gentleman going for the MBA would also do an MBA in joint technology management, because that's a very typical dual degree path. And in any case, these are the research areas we have in technology management. Analytics, modeling, simulation, business intelligence, and big data is a big area. Material science, engineering, and supply chain management and logistics, big thing. End of life cycle calculations for products, for recycling, is another big research area. We have several faculty members, but two of them are worth quoting. Professor Aleph Munger is actually maybe one of the three top world-known experts in the area of supply chain management and end-of-life recycling and generating sequencing code for disassembly. And Professor Alicia Patrick is a new faculty member, actually, but she is a very well-known scientist within the area of material science engineering for the steel industry. So these are two very, amazing faculty members to consider working for, obviously. Mechanical engineering, again, we have so many different applications and so many different research areas. Automation and control, solar energy, fuel cells, sustainable development, and green engineering is a very big area. Computer-aided design engineering and manufacturing. We have extensive manufacturing facilities for the mechanical engineers here. We actually are home to the largest 3D printer in the state of Connecticut. The volume of that printer is approximately 3 meters, which would be like here, times 3 meters, and it has several printing heads. And we use that printer not only to create and produce machine parts and such, or small architectural models. We use it to actually model cities, complete cities, like 30 blocks times 30 blocks with the buildings and so on. And that's actually an amazing piece of equipment to have. And we helped actually the company produce a prototype that we have. So we've been using these 3D printers, and we have at least 10 other smaller 3D printers. We have a very significant has building machine, and we use that for applications and inspection, reverse engineering and design, and you will have access to all of this equipment, and here's a list of all of the areas. This is a compact list of the research centers we have and laboratories, and again, these laboratories are different from the departments, right? I mean, there are 5 departments, computer science engineering, which is home to the undergraduate, master's, and PhD program in computer science and computer engineering. We have the Department of Electrical Engineering, Department of Mechanical Engineering, Department of Biomedical Engineering and Technology Management, meaning 5 academic departments in the School of Engineering. But on top of that, we have these plus probably 4 more, 22 research labs that are actually across the department. They are interdisciplinary research labs where people work across from many different disciplines, including Fluid Dynamics Lab. Again, sustainable energy and environment, which is between mechanical engineering and technology management. Cloud computing cluster, which has been significantly funded and supported by both Amazon and Cisco. The CNC milling machine labs, biomedical embedded system, of course, the robotics intelligence sensing lab, which is very famous. The multimedia information group, the MIG lab, that produces work within the imaging of biomedical data from cameras traveling inside the body. And also for scoring sports. The nanomaterials and nanobiomaterials engineering lab headed by Professor Patra that does work in nanotechnology, nanocarbon use, and also tissue engineering. The DRC controls an IC laboratory within the school of within the electrical engineering department and the computer engineering department, renewable energy, wireless and mobile computing, and again the 3D printing center, which is home to the largest 3D printing machine in the state, and probably in New England, but I'm not sure. Again, this is a list of some of these selected labs. I'm not going to go to talk about these details. You can find lots of details, much more than I mentioned, about the various research labs and the research areas actually within the site. But these are very simple examples of the of what is happening. This is the Army project. This is actually the project title that I was talking about. This actually is an unmanned airplane, but it's a very small plane. It is shot at a speed of approximately 200 to 250 miles per hour. It has unfolding wings that you can wirelessly, you know, change directions while it's traveling at that speed from the ground, and video feedback via actually stereo cameras, not only one, back to the ground, to the soldier who's controlling that particular projectile. And it can travel up to distances of 18 to 20 kilometers now using batteries. And actually one of the big research areas is not only within the area of aerodynamics to make it, you know, do better, but actually is in the area of the battery and how can the battery be used for the wireless sending back of the video and running the camera and running the actuators that move these two unfolding wings. It's a pretty interesting project. Anyway, these are so again, this is the integration of all the components for that particular unmanned air vehicle the project. This is our interdisciplinary robotics intelligence and sensing lab. You can see the milling machine in the background. You can see the mobile platform that we used as part of the project. Talking about wonderful Indian students, this is Professor Sarosh Patel. He is one of the people that we decided to not let go after he finished his PhD. Professor Patel finished his electrical engineering master's degree program, progressed then and finished his mechanical engineering, technology management master's degree. Then he finished his PhD in computer science and engineering. So he's really the embodiment of what an interdisciplinary research engineer and scientist should be, with degrees in technology management, computer science, computer engineering, electrical engineering. And actually the university, he got many offers for faculty positions, and we hired him as assistant professor of computer science and engineering. And now he is my co-director of the robotics and intelligence sensing and control lab at the university.
And he's studying here in Hyderabad.
And he is from Hyderabad. Google him. He's a very interesting fellow, and he loves to see students from Hyderabad. Sarosh Patel is the name. And actually feel free to communicate with him. Terrific gentleman. This is Dr. Aysa Mokadi. He finished his degree in PhD in computer science and master's in computer science. And now is working as actually head of research at IBM T.G. Watson, research in one area. In upstate New York. Continuing on, these are some projects within the robotics intelligence sensing and control lab. I know this is much details, but this detail is important for many reasons. The more you know about the school, the more you know about the labs and the students and the faculty and what we do, the more, the easier your integration will be seamlessly when you come and join us, hopefully in a few weeks or so. Number two, of course, for those of you who are going to get your visas, the more you know about the school and having your own plan of what you want to do and specialize in, the easier things are going to be, obviously. I want to continue on again. Yeah, this is a kind of an interesting project. We have this biorobotics project in terms of developing actually robotic swarms, lots and lots of smaller robots that do big things, better than having one robot do one big thing in a much more expensive fashion. And this is one of what we do. Yes, this is actually the printer that I was talking about. And this is our 3D printing lab. So as you can see here the robotic arm. It's very tough to see, I know, but we have our basically picking a lifting traditional manipulator. You have the 3D milling machine. You have a set of small 3D printers. You have the mobile platform. You have another set of 3D printers. And then you progress. You have the 3D printing device and the milling machines. This is the largest 3D printing platform in the world, actually, and the fastest one. The very first project was designing 5x5 city blocks for the city of Bridgeport. We had the congressman, everybody come to thank us. Yeah, you did us. So that was actually the opening ceremony. This is Congressman Jim Hines. He is the congressman from our district, and he is a very good friend of ours, actually. And as you can see, yeah, he is Professor Sarosh Patel. This is Congressman Haim. This is President Neil Saronin, the president of the university, and this is me. And this was to show off that project that we did of designing the city blocks. These are examples, again, of some of the seed money grants awards that the faculty got. Again, some of what we do and some of the things that might be interesting for you is not only the work that you will be doing in our research labs and with our faculty members who are in the different disciplines and the degree programs and the research centers, but where you will be actually doing your co-ops, internships, and joint research projects. You will be doing research in most of the coursework that you'll be doing at the end of each course or in the middle in terms of class projects, and also for your graduation from the various degree programs within ML, using either a master thesis or a master's project for the master's degree students. You will be probably collaborating with entities like these. We have a big collaboration going on with Brookhaven National Labs with the area of computer engineering and biomedical engineering. Many of our students go there regularly to do joint research between UB and Brookhaven. Same with IBM T.J. Watson Research Center. We have collaboration going on with many universities, including Rail and Rice and several other, Wesleyan and many other universities within the region, and the list goes on. And they actually do donate and give us equipment in addition to the co-ops and internship opportunities and so on. These are examples of the students' awards, which is very important. We are an award-winning school of engineering. And again, if you go to one of the three websites that I mentioned at the beginning, the American Society for Engineering Education website, ASEE.org, and on the new UB site, you take a look at some of the brochures, these are some of our students who won amazing awards. These are some of the NASA awards that our students have received. These are some of the Epsilon Pi Epsilon, that's the Honor Society for Computer Science. These are national awards, meaning each one of these was one out of eight in the nation, or actually five in some cases. We had awards from the American Association for University Women, and even more than that, which is not mentioned here, our students have been winning for the last close to 7 or 8 years, if not more, either first, second, or third, some years actually all of the three combined, top research graduate project awards in the American Society for Engineering Education annual Northeast Conference. And when you go and take a look at our engineering brochures, you will find listings of these awards in the engineering newsletter, which you have access to. So we are really an award-winning university, School of Engineering. And of course, the kudos go to the students who are actually winning these awards because of the research that they are doing, and we are incredibly proud of it, actually. We have several independent smaller scholarships, internal, in addition to the research, graduate studies, and research assistantships and work study positions. This is an example. This gentleman started in 2000. This is Standard Oil, which is the major oil company in Connecticut. So you see here, Bishal Gibir. He's from the neighboring country of Nepal, a student who got his master's and bachelor's in computer engineering, master's in electrical engineering from UB. Now he is a chief information officer, a chief technology officer at Standard Oil, only like 7 years upon graduation. And his company every year gives one to two students an award. That year it was 10,000 that they chose among our graduate or undergraduate student population. This is the CEO of the company, Roy Friedman, and his wife. This is Neil Salonen, the president of the university. Professor Osif Mahmoud, who is the chairman of the computer science and engineering department. Myself and Nishat, the CTO of Western Europe. Again, okay, it's here. These are the Engineering Student Awards at the UB Faculty Research Day. We have a research day which is actually very unique. Very schools of engineering and universities do this. The Faculty Research Day is an event that is actually across the whole campus. And that particular event is basically for all the schools and for all the students, graduate and undergraduate and faculty, to present the research and innovation. This year's event is on March 24th. So those of you who would have joined us in the spring or will join us in the spring semester will have an amazing opportunity actually to attend that day. We have lots of events in campus in general, including IEEE conferences. We just held one actually 2 weeks ago, IEEE conference on industrial electronics, technology and automation. You can actually go to that website, CTIETA, again, CTIETA.org. This was held on campus 2 Fridays ago, something like that. And it was basically, it is the premier conference in industrial electronics automation in the world. And it was held on campus. Faculty Research Day is another big, big event that happened on campus. Again, this is some of our graduate students and what they have won across the university in terms of engineering awards. Again, as you can see, this is Ashish Afadi, Professor Shank, Professor Mike Lowy, who is the expert actually in data analytics and business intelligence in the School of Business, and another student. And these are the awards that they have received at the Faculty Research Day, Faculty Awards. These are the ASC Awards. Again, this is actually phenomenal because, as I mentioned, the Northeast region is home to roughly 40% to 30% of the doctoral engineering schools in the U.S. And the fact that our school has been consistently winning every single year at the graduate level in particular, which your master's degree students, these American Society for Engineering Education Research Project of the Year, first, second, third year position, is an amazing feat. That particular conference I am doubly proud of. It is the 2014 ASCE Zone Conference. The Zone Conference is the northeast of the US, the Middle Atlantic region, and also Canada. So that was home to half the engineering schools in North America, basically. And this actually was held on the University of Wishbone campus. And you can go and check that conference in particular. And we did amazing, as you can see. I mean, we had first, second place. We have first, second place in honorable mentions, and also a specific big data analytics award. So we are very proud. These are some of our collaborators, both non-for-profit, for-profit, organizational and companies. The Academy of Science and Engineering, that's the body that has the set of engineers and scientists who basically dictate policy of science and engineering in the state of Connecticut. That number is limited to 200. Actually, I'm a member of the Academy, and they are one of our great collaborators and have been throughout. Connecticut Engineering Program. This is the school that we designed, the Inter-District Science Magnet School in the city of Bridgeport, which is really a great project. The Discovery Museum and Tatinarium is a very good collaborator of ours. We teach there, we do joint work with them, we actually do work with kids in the Discovery Museum. And one of my own projects, and a student of mine, Bei Wang, who's now a professor at the University of Utah, is permanently displayed at the museum, and that is a set of robotic musicians. It's basically a set of humanoid robots that play music, different instruments, music solenoids, and it's the second floor of the Discovery Museum. So, women engineers, I am particularly proud of our School of Engineering, particularly for the women engineers who are going to be joining us. Close to 20% or 20-something percent of our graduate student population are women engineers. And in the U.S., that percentage is humongous because, on the average, the number of women graduate engineers in the U.S. as a population hovers around 11 or 12%. So we are proud to be home to many so wonderful women engineers in our schools. And also, we have approximately 30% of our faculty, women faculty members in all the departments, including a chair of a current department and a chair to come next January, another department. So we are really very proud of the work that our women engineers, both faculty and students, do. Connecticut Innovations and Connecticut Technology are state agencies that fund our small business high-tech incubator, and they have been our partners for years to help fund these companies. FaceShax is a company, one of the companies in the incubator that is jointly owned by the School of Engineering, faculty and actually students. It's a very interesting and interplayer projects and many other entities, as you can see. These are other awards. These are awards in general that some of our students have received recently, and I'll make this available to you. Whoever would like to have access, of course, is welcome to. This is the incubator in and by itself. These two particular companies are companies that have either been founded, co-founded, or started up by current UB students, faculty, or alumni. And the fact that these companies exist on campus is significant. The gentleman in the School of in the MBA program, the School of Business has just established an entrepreneurial center on the home of the University of Bridgeport that is currently located within the incubator. And it's to home to approximately maybe 18 different entrepreneurial projects started up by students both in the MBA program and the undergraduate school. And in the fall semester, there will be a standalone building, Bauer Hall, which will be basically completely dedicated to an entrepreneurial center on campus. And that building on Park Avenue will not only be home to the students to brainstorm, but it will also have a design and manufacturing center and many other facilities to help these companies, the business companies, prototype their products, whether they are software models or manufacturing prototypes. These are some of the companies that have existed in our high-tech business incubator. Some of these companies were in the area of biomedical engineering, brain imaging in particular, software engineering, biometrics and facial recognition, fund management, and automated trading software. Finally, this is something that we are very, very proud of, actually, and this is actually outdated. University of Bridgeport is one of approximately 22 schools from amongst the 120 or so schools of doctoral schools of engineering in the country that has been invited to the White House to help launch the Grand Challenges Scholars Program. And this is the fourth website that I'd like you to go to get familiar with, so please Google it. And again, this is the National Academy of Engineering Grand Challenges website. One more time, National Academy of Engineering Grand Challenges website. National Academy of Engineering in the US is the entity that advises the federal government on policies related to engineering. There are three academies in the US. Each of them consists of 400 individuals. One of them is the National Academy of Engineering, which is home to 400, that's the limit, individuals, scientists who are eminent in their fields, National Academy of Medicine, and the National Academy of Sciences. And the National Academy of Engineering, collaboratively with the others, have defined 14 challenges that are being considered to be the challenges in technology facing humanity in the next century. I'm going to mention a few, but I actually would like you to go to that site, please, and take a look, because we are an integral part of this project. Some of these challenges are very simplistic and very easy to understand, the challenges, like access to clean water, for example. That's like a humanity challenge. It is said that 22% of the world population don't have that access. Challenges like imaging and reverse engineering the brain to be able to conduct and do significant research in AI and in deep learning, mimicking the work, the way our neurons work. I mentioned one of these challenges earlier, and that challenge was the personalized medicine approach to medicine, as opposed to the generic approach to medicine that is taking place, designing on the fly, on demand, personalized medicines for all ailments based on the human person's chromosome structures and the DNA. And National Academy of Engineering have chosen some schools, and we are one of them, to launch this program to graduate scholars at the undergraduate level primarily, who are capable to actually tackle these problems within the next 10 years. And this year we were invited again, literally less than 3 weeks ago. I was at the White House, and I actually proposed extending this program. You will see a news blurb, I think, on the University of Richmond website that talks about this in details. I proposed that we extend this program to our graduate students, the master's degree students in particular. And I probably shouldn't have spoke, because they tasked the University of Richmond to actually design that program for the US. And I am hoping that some of you, when you come and join us, will be able to do one of your studies and actually join that program in your second year, because you'll be selecting very few graduate students to be national grand challenges. Program is open for everybody. It doesn't have to be a US citizen, because as you probably all know, graduate engineering in the US is dominated by international students at this point. So take a look at that. That's the fifth site that I'm asking you to check. And that's basically, just go to bridgeport.edu. It's one of the very first news articles describing what the program is and what University of Bridgeport Engineering will be doing to launch the graduate National Grand Challenges Scholars Program in the country, which is really cool. Again, a couple of other things. Sorry, I didn't think this would be as long as it is, but I think it's good information for particularly the students. And of course the parents in the room. Again, we are an interdisciplinary hub for research and innovation. Many different structures on campus support our activities, including the incubator, our PhD programs. We have an innovators and school of business executive series in which we invite incredible, eminent people within the disciplines in the field to talk with our students. The chairman of the National Reserve was just, you know, in the school of business less than a few months ago, talking about trends and what's happening, where several of the UN ambassadors have come to talk, and UB, of course, in the case of engineering and technology, given who we are, we always have colloquium speakers who come to us every week, actually, to provide a colloquium on a topic of interest, and these are things that are happening. Industry Advisory Board, which I'll talk about next, is a very important, significant constituent of what we do at the school. And many other issues, including the Entrepreneurial Center. This is our Industry Advisory Board, and these are some of the companies that are represented on our Industry Advisory Board by either the CEO, the CIO, the COO, or the CTO. So we have C-level executives from these companies, pharmaceutical companies, Bunge, Oracle, Pfizer, Pitney Bowes, Priceline, Sikorsky, Standard Oil. I just mentioned that a few minutes ago. 3M, Vodafone, Xerox, and many, many others. The Industry Advisory Board is a set of professionals at the C-level, one of these four titles that I just mentioned, who actually do come and work with us, providing feedback regarding our programming, providing advice regarding how our curriculum, how our labs, and how our courses should look like. They support us by hiring all of our students. A huge percentage, actually, of our graduate students go for co-ops and internship. That percentage is approximately 70 to 80%, if not more. As Steve mentioned, my problem is whenever I go to a meeting anywhere, I'm always asked what is the percentage of students who find a job within 6 months of graduation. That's a typical metric in the US, right? When to find a job. And I always laugh, because my problem is to keep them till they graduate, because they get the job offers even before they graduate. Many of these industry advisory board members who are our friends, offer internships and co-ops to our students at the university, obviously, and do hire them on permanent employment, as you have seen from some of your seniors who talked in the video earlier. And they also help us by donating for significant funding and equipment. And they work with our students and faculty and advise them. And it is probably one of the most important boards and most important entities that we work with at the university. These are some of the companies that our students work in. Again, I mean, that's a very simple, a very small sample of companies that are local, really, or regional, but our reach is global. Global in every single sense. Our students work in the tri-state area, as Steve mentioned, meaning New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. But they work as far off as California, they work as far off as Hamburg, you know, they work everywhere. And these are some of the local companies or close to being local companies. I think we had one or two UN ambassadors of their countries that graduated from UP who were working in the UN as the permanent country's representatives in the UN. Many, many, many students working in Pindibos, Aetna, GE, People's Bank, UBS, and the case of both actually computer science and business students. IBC is a huge software company. This is actually a multi-billion company that nobody really knows about, but you can Google that. The chief information officer actually is my student, who graduated about 8 years ago. Many of our students went on not only to work for these, but to found their own companies. There is a huge entrepreneurial movement in the US, and particularly on the Northeast and New England area. And our entrepreneurial center and the collaboration that the School of Engineering has with the School of Business will make many of these opportunities actually happen. Our incubator does not only host companies or startups, but it is also an incubator for your ideas. Some of you might know about this, but you will know more when you come. Some of the ideas that you will have within your classes and graduation projects are patentable ideas, so we actually provide intellectual property support via lawyers who will help you with your intellectual property and patenting. We have seed money funders and grant providers who will help you to seed fund your grant if they deem that your business plan is appropriate. We just had an innovator series, and this is the sixth thing that I'll ask you to do. The innovator series was conducted last Wednesday, and it had three venture capitalists actually who have funded many of our student projects on the panel. You can see the profiles and the remarks, and they are available to help our students and to help also advise the entrepreneurial center when it gets constructed on campus in the fall for the student projects. Okay, I think I'm done. So in a nutshell, I think this is mostly everything that I wanted to talk about. I am sure that you have many questions about many different aspects and what we do, and it would be my pleasure to. Should I take them now?
Yes.
Okay, any questions? I know this is a lot to take in one session, but this is crucial information for you to get really a feel of where you're headed and what your future could and will be. And also help you so you can get your work done and come to the US. Any questions? And I'm available the rest of the day, so if you want to ask me later, that's fine too. Good. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Shu. That was really informative, wealth of information. So you have, you know, six things to kind of go back and research about. We will break for a while. There's high tea outside, so you can grab your cup of tea, coffee, and little bites to eat. And in the next 10 minutes, then let's come back over here. 15 minutes? Okay. So in the next 15 minutes, let's come back over here. There's one more presentation that will talk about the steps that you have to kind of do once you receive your visa. Okay, that's going to be a short presentation, and then once we finish that, we will take the question and answers. All right, so you can break right now. It's right outside.
I'm thinking that we'll create a couple of slides to get the news. preface, I think you're going to talk first about UV according to ASE standards and criteria.
Which I did talk about this.
We did, but I think if we visualize it up there, and then we'll put the colleges.
Thank you. I'm coming up. Thank you, sir.
And the colleges that prepare your zoning criteria.
Okay.
And then this justifies everything that
okay.
the front of the position.
Okay. No problem.
I think it's yes, I'm going to go right now. Very good. That was actually excellent. No wonder I didn't hear that before. It's a new presentation. That's great. I'm going to go get, I'll bring my laptop and work on it. You need to talk for an hour or more.
Oh, my God.
That's fine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
are you?
I'm very good.
Yeah, this is Karnakar actually. I met you a couple of times in earlier also here.
Okay.
The last year.
We had
in
a,
fact,
on, the phone,
on the phone.
On the phone
and the main area.
Okay, okay.
Many times I've disturbed you.
No, that is absolutely fine. I hope this was informative for you.
No, no, I have not listened to it. In fact, my daughter has already come. You know, she was here by 11:30.
Oh, you have
know,
come just now, is
just
it?
Just now, yes.
Oh, you missed out on most of the part.
No,
most of
because
the
she was already
she
there.
Was already yeah. here. Okay.
She was already here.
That okay,
was not
okay.
an issue. I believe she
yeah.
has missed anything. We in fact came to meet you, you know.
Okay, okay.
And basically what would be the fee structure and all, you know, like we are going to show about, you know, like 20 lakhs is the bank loan which we have already got approved. And then 15 lakhs is the balance which is there in our accounts, you know. Both father and mother are the sponsors.
15 lakhs.
1 lakh. So it's all together 36 lakhs. And then the liquid cash like FDs and all other things. You know, like
security. How much is that?
It is about 8 lakhs I'm showing here. It's coming all together around 43 lakhs, the gold value and all
that's
of
fine,
that.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is fine, no?
Yeah.
That's all. And apart from this also, we've gone in for a sponsor also.
Apart from this?
Yes, apart
who's
from
this. Who's the sponsor?
He's my uncle actually, and the daughter's my uncle. He's my
where
brother.
Is he located?
He's located in Hyderabad.
Okay.
And he works for CSC as a project manager. He draws us roughly an annual income of 15 lakhs.
Mm-hmm.
We both of us are also IT return holders. But last time when we went, you know, I don't know for what reason, you know, they have not even seen the files or papers. She got already got twice rejected.
Yeah, they, you know, we were actually talking to the visa counselor
okay.
over here, the
okay.
visa officer who take your interview.
Okay.
So we went to Delhi, we met the visa chief, we then went to, where were we?
You had to.
No, I'm having.
Okay.
Half of the cup is over. We met with, where were we? We were in one more city. Chennai
okay.
and tomorrow we are going to the Hyderabad one. So they are basically saying that they're looking at the student's confidence level and the level of communication.
Okay.
And they're not looking at any documents.
Okay.
They don't have time because then on average the visa interview is only 1 minute.
Okay.
So they don't have time to kind of check for anything. So they're looking at the student's confidence level.
Okay.
So that is what you need to build on the student. I know she's going to be a little scared,
yeah.
you know, because it's the government. It is quite intimidating, but there is no other way, you know, that's the thing they're thinking. There's no other way. Why don't you go have something as well?
No, it's fine.
Because we will have a visa session where I'm going to be talking about
okay,
this
okay,
now.
Thank you.
These are the ones I'll
okay,
talk about.
Thank you. Have it.
In another few more minutes, we'll all go back inside. In another few more minutes. In a couple of minutes, we'll go back inside. Okay? Thank you.
start now.
Okay.
Would you like to go to the washroom?
Yeah.
So you can get the plates as well inside. You can actually get the plates inside if you like. Could we all please go inside? We'll start now.
Okay. Can we have the dealer of chakras to kindly come on to change and select it on your behalf?
Still recording. Oh, yes.
You know, the coffee break in there too.